The recent fight against COVID was the largest deployment in the 223-year history of the United States Public Health Service Commissioned Corps. The pandemic highlighted many of the Corps' strengths, but its vulnerabilities as well.
This is truly an unprecedented situation.
What it's done is it's put a mirror up to our public health system. It's allowed us to see the problems that exist at its roots. We literally have had to build public health systems from scratch in many communities to respond to COVID, in order to be able to make testing available, in order to vaccinate people. These are things that should have been done a long time ago.
Gene Migliaccio holds a doctorate in public health, and he served as a commissioned officer in the U.S. Public Health Service. He's now the president of the Public Health Service Commissioned Officers Foundation.
From becoming the unknown in public health, we became the known, and then we became the vilified in a short order, in just a matter of a year plus time span. And it was really rough to take with a lot of the misinformation.
This is Conversations on Healthcare.
Gene Migliaccio, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your invitation.
Yeah.
Look forward to chatting with you today.
I think many in our audience know about the U.S. Public Health Service Commissioned Corps, or Margaret, maybe we haven't done our job, but there's still a lot of confusion, even at the highest levels of government. The Commissioned Corps is the only uniformed service in the world dedicated to public health. Perhaps you could start by asking you to explain the Corps and what it does.
Will do. Appreciate it. That's a really a good question. We're going to talk hopefully a little later on about the invisible Corps, but we are a strong, mighty Corps of about 6,000 individuals that represent a number of different specialties, and I'll talk to you about it as we go along today. But I wanted to highlight some of the recent work that the U.S. Public Health Service Commissioned Corps has been doing to serve the nation. So we our roots go back to 1798, where men and women have served on the front lines protecting the nation's public health in what we know today as the Commissioned Corps of the United States Public Health Service. We trace our origins way back to the U.S. Marine Hospital Service that was implemented to protect against the spread of diseases that were coming into the country, traditionally by seaport, sailors who returned from foreign ports to maintain the health of new immigrants. So today we are one of eight uniformed services. Everyone knows about the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, the Coast Guard. They know about the Space Force, and they may know about the National Atmospheric Administration, but not a lot of people know about the United States Public Health Service. So we're one of eight uniformed services with a 200-year history. We're led by an Assistant Secretary for Health. Many people know the United States Surgeon General, and those are our leaders. We have about 6,000 officers that are full-time, highly qualified public health officers and specialists. And so I mentioned we have a number of professions within the public health service. It includes physicians, dentists, nurses, pharmacists, clinical dietitians, engineers, health service officers, et cetera, that make up those 6,000 officers. We're deployed to many of the federal agencies throughout the Department of Health and Human Services. We also support 10 other federal departments with their health missions. And we're at actually 800 locations throughout the United States and the world. So, and just a little bit of a commercial on the Corps. Their sole mission is to protect, promote, and advance health and safety of the nation. And so they do that in a variety of different missions. I'd be more than happy to chat with you more about that.
Well, I want to thank you for that great overview. And I think particularly your last statement about their mission and purpose, really important message for the country. But I want to follow up by giving you an opportunity to explain the role of the group that you now lead, the Public Health Service Commissioned Officers Foundation. What's the mission vision of this group?
Well, it's an important mission. So the foundation was created about 24 years ago in And the sole purpose of the foundation is to provide support to those commissioned officers of the Public Health Service and build partnerships between the commissioned corps, the active duty corps members, and the larger public health community. We focus on a number of important areas. Professional development, we run a symposium, an annual symposium for our officers yearly. We focus on providing scholarships to officers and their family members. We look at the preservation of the history of the Corps, and we also focus on research and studies to advance public health information and knowledge to our broader audience of the nation.
Well, that's such important work, and your nonprofit is part of a new documentary titled "Invisible Corps," narrated by actress Ali McGraw. And the piece is trying to raise awareness about the Corps and also how the public health has become politicalized.
Testing had a very slow start, as you know, in the United States. And I called all the experts from the commissioned Corps, many of whom were over at the Diamond Princess or in Wuhan, who had been testing everyone. Brought in a bunch of logistics people, environmental health officer people, had some people from FEMA. And we basically camped out in my office for 48 hours to develop a national plan for drive-through testing. There were only 10 drive-through testing sites throughout the country. By the end of the weekend, we had a plan for 41 starting from scratch. And those first 41 sites, which were implemented within 10 days all around the country, were all run by commissioned Corps officers.
I think we all live through COVID. I think there was a good part of the early COVID where public health was thought of very positively. And we had many guests on who were talking about this resurgence in young people thinking about attending college and focusing on public health. But things changed along the path. But I'm wondering about things that might have changed. What was the impact to the core that COVID brought about?
Well, your points are well spoken and well taken. From becoming the unknown in public health, we became the known, mm-hmm. And then we became the vilified in a short order in just a matter of a year plus time span. And it was really rough to take with a lot of the misinformation and the pundits that talked about. Public health talked about the response to COVID over the years, and I think it brought tremendous discredit to a lot of the work that individuals do in public health in general across the United States. Be they in the U.S. Public Health Service Commission Corps, or be they in federal, state, or local health departments. So there's been a little bit of a disservice. Based upon the experience that we all went through during COVID.
Well, Gene, during the pandemic, I think you were probably one of the very first units that was called up. The Public Health Service Commission Corps deployed more than two of three of your 6,100 officers, which means people leaving their homes for who knows how long to go and serve, mobilized them from across 11 professional public health and medical disciplines. Certainly, we all remember the outbreak on board the Diamond Princess cruise ship in Japan. We remember the first cases in the state of Washington, and your people were right there. So when you look back, as I think we all have, on the time of the COVID pandemic and try and learn from it, what do you think the Corps did right during COVID? Where did you look back and say we really hit it? And where do you see opportunities should there be something like this? Hopefully there won't, but should there be something like this again, or just for the ongoing focus of the Corps?
Yeah, I think what we did right was it was our mobilization. And just in terms of bringing the best minds together within the Commissioned Corps of the Public Health Service to start to think about how we're going to look at testing. When COVID hit, we didn't have testing centers.
Right.
And it started slowly. And then all of a sudden, there were hundreds of them. But that took a tremendous amount of effort by some of the best and brightest minds within the Department of Health and Human Services. And our core officers were at the front lines in terms of coming up with many of the plans. And then most importantly, in terms of the implementation and the deployment of resources. So I think what we did right was our immediate response to bringing together and conceptualizing the plan that we needed to implement to combat COVID. And there was a lot of unknowns along the way. And so various organizations, as we know, pivoted in terms of making decisions that sometimes weeks and months down the lane, we had new knowledge and we were able to enhance our decision making and continue to course correct along the way. From a quality perspective, I think that's critically important. Some of our folks within the world and had decided to use that opportunity to basically state that we didn't have a game plan. We were pivoting too quickly. But I think we had a lot of new information, a lot of new knowledge that was coming at us that we were actually deploying and implementing at the same time.
Well, those were really difficult times. The Biden administration was responsible for the vaccination process, and they turned to the core, right? 2021. Yep. To be on the front lines. And people should remember this was dangerous work. And you really helped lead the charge. And I'm wondering, subsequent to that, are you now playing any role in the upcoming fall vaccination efforts? But also maybe just reflect on the time in 2021 and the bravery that was shown by the Corps.
Yeah. You know, I think of the time in 2021, our Assistant Secretary for Health, Brett Jawar, and our U.S. Surgeon General, Jerome Adams, they were front and center daily in terms of some of the briefings that were given to the American people. They were at the front lines in terms of the deployment and working with folks over at CDC and National Institutes of Health on vaccine development and starting that the initial thought process. Dr. Tony Fauci was front and center. Also a prior Corps member. So I think that the efforts that took place in 21 were able to actually help us as we started to develop a vaccine and then move forward with a vaccine deployment plan throughout the nation. And tremendous partners that were actually brought in to work with the federal government from the private sector to actually work on the deployment of that vaccine. And so that's a lesson learned in terms of future pandemics, in terms of that playbook, in terms of what we need to do, in terms of working with our scientists, our public health scientists, working with our community partners for rapid deployment of vaccines. And that's an outtake in terms of what we've learned. What we also learned, and I just want to share with you, we learned that our public health infrastructure, it's been well stated and well said in our environment, in the public health environment. But for your audience, I just want to certainly tell you that we still have fractures throughout the public health system. And there was a recent study that was put out by the de Beaumont Foundation. And what we see in here is that today we still have about 80,000 full-time equivalents that were short in public health. And that's at the local health departments and state health departments. We're 50,000 short at local health departments for professionals in public health and 30,000 at the state health departments. And what I thought we would see is more an outpouring of more federal resources for training of individuals coming into the health professions for scholarships and to bring more and more individuals into the world of public health. It materialized for a short period of time, and now we're on to something different. So that's a concern, you know, in terms of where we are today in 2024, just a short time past the pandemic. But the infrastructure needs a tremendous attention, and I'm concerned that we're not there, and it's going to take some time to get there. So we're going to see another pandemic sometime, hopefully not in our lifetimes, but there will be more. And so what we've learned in terms of the fractures in our public health infrastructure, community level, state level, and even federal level, where we need to put more resources. And I'd like to see more emphasis being placed in that space.
Well, that sounds like a good strategy, Gene. And anybody who's involved in health and healthcare, and particularly public health, maybe has to be a little bit thick-skinned about what gets thrown at you in terms of critiques, because you wouldn't be out there in front and they wouldn't be talking about you if you weren't doing very difficult work.
Yeah.
But still, there is this need to educate the public, inspire the next generation of people, and build those partnerships across the country. And I would imagine when you're in the commissioned corps, one has certain limits around, you know, how much one communicates and how one communicates. But with your foundation, I'm wondering how much of an effort are you making to fundamentally get that message out there about the work of the Corps, about the opportunity for young people, no different than Peace Corps, AmeriCorps, other opportunities for service that people have had. What are you doing to get the attention of young people to be on the campuses and in the schools and in the communities?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we did The foundation can be that voice for officers that are part of established governmental organizations. So as a foundation, we can use our voice to actually articulate some of the areas where we can continue to strengthen the Corps and also strengthen the health and the public health infrastructure of the nation. So one of the things that we came up with, and just in terms of bringing the voice forward, was a documentary on the Invisible Corps. You know, it kind of traces the roots of the Commissioned Corps going back to our earliest days of 1798. But it's really a story about public health in the United States in terms of how we've developed as a nation over the past 200 years, with the Commissioned Corps being an integral part of that that history of development from diseases coming in through the seaports in terms of coming up with strong public health systems and programs throughout the country. The Corps really has an important role. So one of the thoughts that we came up with is in terms of just trying to get more attention brought to public health. And we put forward a documentary called The Invisible Corps. The term invisible is because many times you don't know about public health. It's silent. You know, if you're drinking water from your faucet or if you buy bottled water, it comes out pure. You don't have to worry about it. If there's no air pollution in your community and the climate is great, you don't think about it. It's when things start to break that you start to realize about the individuals that support the public's health with some of the systems that they're engaged with. So I think that what the foundation has done is brought a renewed awareness to public health in general with our documentary, not only to talk about the Corps, but to talk about public health in general. Mm-hmm. And we've also put forward in terms of developing, every year we educate and provide a symposium where we focus on public health leadership for our officers. And the important thing in terms of education is really to strengthen not only our officers, but the work that they do on a daily basis so they can have a major impact on the health of Americans throughout the nation.
Dean, I want to pick up a thread of what we were talking a little bit about earlier, because foundation's got a number of opportunities to be the voice and vehicle for combating some very difficult problems. And one is this contagion of anti-science has become one of the greatest threats to the health of our communities. I'm wondering how you're going about that. Do you have the right resources in place to do that? Tell us a little more about this effort. It's so important because we've seen, we talked about earlier, the early part of COVID, everybody was looking to the science, and then all of a sudden there became a backlash, and you've got a lot of false narratives going on.
Yeah, I wish we had more resources to combat some of the misinformation out there. I think it's going to take quite a bit of time before we can finally look on the other side, because individuals are no matter what we look at within the United States, just focusing on the states, you're going to have individuals that really look to government for solutions, and you have individuals that look away from government for those solutions that are coming at you. I think in the area of public health, we haven't been questioned like this for perhaps our history. But now there has been a vocal push to question the science, to question the delivery, to question decisions that are made by public health leaders. So I think we have a tremendous amount of work to do. We have a tremendous amount of work to do with our elected officials to get the resources that we need to really start to try and put some solid information out there and combat the misinformation. So that's critically important. So to continue to tell the story about individuals like the Commissioned Corps of the Public Health Service that does good, as that only uniformed service in the United States that really does good throughout the world. We're the only uniformed service. You had mentioned that. But, you know, when you think about our work in terms of touching Americans every day, from that fluoridated drinking water to eliminating malaria in the country to caring for veterans and focusing in on some of the major disasters that we've seen, from the 9/11 attacks, to the Hurricane Katrina's, to Ebola outbreaks in Liberia, to COVID, as we discussed, to other plagues of opioids, gun violence, industrial accidents that we see, and so many, many more things. If we're doing those things right, we will start to rebuild that trust that that's been challenged through COVID in terms of some of the politics, the politicization that we've gone through. But when we start to do things right, we'll start to regain that trust. I really believe that. We had another major deployment a number of months back with the Commissioned Corps with the fires out in Maui and in Hawaii. We've been at many of the any of the major shootings that take place within the United States. Although unfortunate, the Corps is always there for, working on behavioral health. And so we're continuing to deploy. We're continuing to do good. And I think that that will tremendously help rebuild that trust within community by community by community along the way.
Well, telling the story as you are doing is so important to building support. But we all know the pragmatic reality that funding is critical to the strategy of how you actually take those resources and get out there. I was surprised to learn that I think you don't have a specific line item in the federal budget for service operations, but this is something that you're advocating for. Tell us about that. Do you have the challenges of going to Congress every year looking for support for the Corps, or is that built into the federal budget already?
Yeah, the foundation doesn't have that as a foundation. We leave that to our association, the Commissioned Officers Association does a lot of the lobby work in terms of trying to get resources for the Commissioned Corps. And I know that the agencies do too. The department really pushes hard, but it's we're strained. We're underfunded, and under-resourced. Our Commissioned Corps, unfortunately, is not as strong as it used to be. We're down in numbers. We used to be approximately around 6,400, and now we're less than 6,000. So we lost many officers after COVID. There's been an issue in terms of trying to onboard more officers into the Corps. So that's a challenge for us, too. So we're feeling the effects.
Uh-huh. And Gene, if you look at that pipeline, I'm wondering what you're seeing in terms of young people's interest in public health careers. We talked about this a little earlier, that early on phase of the COVID, there was an enormous amount of interest. What's public health? And people finally got what public health was. Then there was a drop off. But right now, what are you hearing or seeing across the country in terms of young people wanting this as a profession?
Yeah, thanks. That's an excellent question. It kind of hits at my day job in terms of my work as an associate dean over at the School of Public Health, Milken Institute School of Public Health at George Washington University. So after COVID, we're the largest school of public health in the United States in terms of student size, because we have a massive online presence. Our enrollment was through the ceiling. it was just amazing right after COVID. There was so much interest in public health, a lot of people interested in epidemiology, for example. But then over the last few years, probably around 2.5, 3 years, we're starting to see that height start to decline back to where it's been typically. Now, we belong to the university, as many schools of public health belong to the Associated Schools and Programs of Public Health. And the numbers across the board from all schools of public health is down from our height from a few years ago. I think there was this groundswell. I think we got some great students that have come into public health, and I think it's going to be wonderful as we start to graduate our students into the workforce, and hopefully they can take many of the jobs where there's openings and vacancies in as we call it, governmental public health and federal, state, local health departments. I believe that that'll be a wonderful benefit for our communities in terms of minting brand new individuals that are public health trained. So I'm excited about that. We're starting to see, you know, more and more physicians and nurses and pharmacists. There is a large groundswell across all health professions, not only the field of public health.
Right. Well, maybe I could get you to speak to just one more specific area before we begin to wrap up. But certainly we have had many wonderful colleagues who were former members of the Indian Health Service. And I understand that's actually the most common agency for commissioned officers to serve in. The IHS and the Corps have just developed a 7-year strategic plan to really improve this recruitment and retention of public health service officers with expertise in health, but also engineering and environmental health. What are the specific challenges of recruiting officers to work with the Indian Health Service, and how is that work progressing? Are you making inroads with that? And perhaps are you able to recruit from within the Native population as well?
Yeah, that's the key. Recruiting from the Native population is ideal. They really have people, you know, identify from within their communities. So that we do see a lot of individuals from Native Americans that are actually entering the health professions and actually going back to their communities to really make a difference. And that's wonderful. One of the most difficult things that you find in recruitment, not only within the Indian Health Service, but just in terms of rural America, and a lot of our reservations are not in urban areas where you typically are able to attract a broad a group of health professionals, but they're in rural areas, and it's really difficult across the board. And Native Americans, they have some really unique health issues that are so critical to bring professionals in from not only in terms of the clinical specialties, but basically in the area of behavioral health, in the areas of nutrition, et cetera. So it's really important that the Indian Health Service is actually on a recruitment drive, because there are health professionals that really want to, number one, support Native Americans, number two, special populations, and number three, they really want to come into the United States Public Health Service as a commissioned officer to do good. And the Indian Health Service is a wonderful organization, welcoming organization that will take care of officers throughout their careers if they stay with the Indian Health Service. They've got wonderful facilities throughout the United States.
And, Gene,
and their medical centers are second to none.
Gene, thinking about doing good, I'm wondering if you could tell our audience about your service. We understand one of the key moments was coordinating the federal health care response to over 200,000 Katrina evacuees in Houston. Tell us some more.
Oh, thanks. I got to go back in the memory bank, but that's a wonderful question. It was one of my highlights of being a public health officer to support a mission. So when Hurricane Katrina came roaring through New Orleans, a lot of individuals took shelter in the Alamo Dome. And so the thought process back in the day was there would be a dome-to-dome transfer with some of the issues that were taking place in New Orleans with the Superdome infrastructure being depleted. It went through a hurricane. It had holes in the ceiling. It wasn't really a safe place to house so many individuals. So there was a plan afoot was to move. It was a dome-to-dome transfer, Superdome to Alamo Dome in Houston, Texas. And they brought buses in to move people out. And when that mission was over, not only those 16,000 people came, but about 200,000 people migrated to Houston, Texas from New Orleans and put a tremendous strain on the community. And we saw that out-migration from New Orleans in many different areas. In Texas, there was, you know, we saw it not only in Houston, but we saw it in Dallas and San Antonio, and we saw it in Mississippi, and we saw it in other places. So public health officers were deployed to various cities to work with the infrastructure. So in my particular case, I was assigned to the mayor's office in Houston, Texas, to be the at the time the secretary's representative for the federal response for the city of Houston. And I immediately engaged actually with a colleague of mine that I had known from my uniform service days, who was actually leading the charge for Houston. And we were colleagues, and he was running the public health hospital system in Houston, and I was able to connect with him to find out their needs. I also worked with the Houston Department of Health to just find out what the needs were. Their resources were totally strapped with over 200,000 people coming in. Their convention, their Superdome was full. Their convention center was full. They were placing individuals and in a lot of temporary shelters. And so our response was to mobilize medical assets outside of Houston because they had their population to take care of. So we actually worked for our Houston case. We actually worked with wonderful organizations in California, Scripps Health and Kaiser, who sent in hundreds of medical professionals, physicians and nurses and behavioral health specialists. And we were able to federalize them, and they were able to not only help out at areas like the Alamo Dome, but they were also able to help out in the convention center and also provide resources throughout the city. So it was a wonderful experience in terms of the collaboration that we received from our federalization and mobilization of private sector. But in terms of working with the city of Houston at the time, the mayor and his senior health staff, it was phenomenal. Every day they met talking about a number of things, housing, but medical and health, public health was front and center. So it was a great experience in terms of the work that we did. I spent about 60 days in the city providing support, whatever the city needed. My job, the secretary told me, was whatever the city needs from a public health response, let's make it happen. And that's your orders, and then you figure out how you're going to do it.
Well, Gene Migliaccio, thank you so much for your time, for your insights, and for your service. And thanks to our audience for being here. Be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube. Find us on Facebook and X with our account name, CHC Radio. And as always, you can go online to chcradio.com and sign up for email updates. And please share your thoughts and comments about this program. Gene, thank you so much for joining us here today on Conversations on Healthcare.
Yeah, my pleasure.
This copyrighted program is produced by Conversations on Healthcare and cannot be reproduced or retransmitted in whole or in part without the express written consent from Community Health Center, Inc. The views expressed by guests are their own, and they do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Conversations on Healthcare or its affiliated entities.